Hello, hello, and welcome to the Meat Bucket Podcast Experience Series, where Big Jake and I sit down with your favorite chefs, restaurant owners, and other peer guests for a conversation centered around food and drink. I'm your host, Nick Massaro. Tonight is Wednesday, October 13th. We just got done shooting the intro for the episode that you heard last month, if you tuned in, with BJ Lieberman and his wife, Bronwyn. But tonight, we're kicking off an episode that we recorded on September 8th with North Country Charcuterie. Before we get that introduced, I want to tell you, which you probably already know, that this episode is brought to you by our dear friends at The Butcher and Grocer, which is currently located at 1089 West 1st Avenue in Grandview Heights, Ohio. They are adding two new locations. We'll put some links in the show notes for that news. But they are solely focused on providing the highest quality Ohio beef, lamb, pork, chicken, cheese, and select grocery items. Their products are 100% pastured, and they are antibiotic and growth hormone free. I would like to tag Big Jake in early on this intro to ask him how he likes to enjoy Butcher and Grocer products.
Well, football season had kicked off a little over a month ago at this point. The NFL season, we're big Browns fans in my household.
And here we go, Brownies, here we go.
And our neighbors, we like to get together on Sundays, and there is no better way to celebrate watching the Browns try their best to march their way to victory, which has been happening more often lately, shout out Browns, than eating some fantastic sausages from the Butcher and Grocer. Now, lately, we've had a slew of them come in, and the big favorite over the last month when they have been in the case, people in my neighborhood have been picking up the Mexican street corn. It's been fire. That is our number one right now. And then you back that with a little green chorizo. You chop them up on a cutting board like charcuterie, which we're going to talk about, and you share it with everybody. You know, everybody gets a taste. Everybody gets a sample. You put out some dipping sauces if you're so inclined, maybe a couple toothpicks to stay COVID safe. And you go ahead and share some food from the Butcher and Grocer. So the sausages have been a favorite of ours as we've been marching through the football season so far, and we really appreciate the quality.
That is absolutely fantastic. I will also mention that while you're there purchasing some tasty sausages for your Sunday football watch, take a look at the shelf behind you. There's going to be a bottle of spice rub with the green label. It is the Meat Bucket blend. We teamed up with Nathan Killen, hashtag the sausage scientist. He really did, you know, he carried the load here, but it is a chipotle lime rub. You can use it on chicken, pork chops. You can put it on a steak. You can marinate whatever you want inside of that spice rub. It's going to make it absolutely fantastic. So while you're at the Butcher and Grocer, be sure to pick up a bottle of the Meat Bucket blend. But Jake, how about this, man? This is our first time shooting two intros in one night, and this experience that we had with the Salami Swami and the Salami Monger, James and Duncan Forbes of North Country Charcuterie. I mean, I know it was about a month ago, but the memory, it feels like it was just yesterday. That was such a great experience.
It was. And I think much like the products they're putting out, it takes time for us to get it out on the shelf. Okay. So consider this episode a bit of charcuterie, if you will. So we're saving up for our listening experience. So here's the thing. Those guys, fantastic combo. I think the brother thing is what stands out most to me. Getting the opportunity to work with anybody in your family is a unique experience. And to have James and Duncan show us around their facility was awesome. I felt like I was in an episode of Breaking Bad with those guys. And they have a great rapport together. Duncan, he kind of brings that fire. James, he kind of sits back. He definitely knows his stuff. Duncan knows his stuff as well. Do not get me wrong in any way, shape, or form there. But it's kind of like a little bit of an episode of Step Brothers. You know, they have some good banter back and forth. We had a great tour. We got to see what they're putting out and what people can order. It's very unique. It's very high quality. It's an educational episode, especially for me at least, and I'm sure for you as well. But sitting down there and listening to them talk about, you know, the curing process, what goes into that, what can be more healthy for people who consume meats that are aged. Very important for the consumer to hear that kind of stuff. And they do it in a way that doesn't make you feel like I'm an idiot, you know? And quite often I feel that way. So I appreciate them taking the time to break it down for us. We did have a wonderful meal with them. We had a full spread. We had sausage from the butcher and grocer. What else did we have as well?
Well, the thing that stood out to me was the spreadable chorizo with the hot honey dipped on it on top of some of the crackers that they were serving. But they put out a full spread of charcuterie. They had a bunch of different kind of salamis and pepperonis and things that we were tasting, which were, they were fantastic. And what's kind of cool is they poured up a huge pitcher out of the keg of some Imperial Porter from Wolf's Ridge Brewing. So we paired all of these kind of spicy and tangy and cured meats with this super delicious, chocolatey, high ABV porter or stout, one of the two. But you get the idea. It was really quite nice, and it didn't just taste nice, but it definitely elevated my brain waves. I was feeling pretty good.
I think they actually put that beer into one of those sausages, don't they?
They do. In fact, if you keep listening, you will hear more about that. They do a great job of explaining, you know, the ingredients that they use and why they choose to source their meats from some farms here in Ohio. Just like our sponsor, the Butcher and Grocer, it's important for them to get good quality meat to start with, and healthy and happy animals to be dispatched. And which is an inside joke. Keep listening because you'll hear more about that.
And one of my other favorite parts about this episode, let me tie it back in a little bit here, is so I was at the Dublin Farmers Market. This was probably less than 3 weeks ago. My wife wanted to go out there. So we went out with our neighbors, Rob and Jessica. They stood in line to go. Well, Jessica and Alex stood in line to go to the Crazy Cucumber, which does some curing of pickles. Fantastic pickles if you like those down there. And Rob and I ventured down to North Country Charcuterie's stand, and we spoke to, well, James and Duncan's teacher. And guess what? We bought some spreadable chorizo, and we also had that while we watched the Browns as well. And we threw a little bit of hot honey on it. And that is the kind of stuff that brings the world full circle. Because, you know, I talked to her about, you know, I think it's Wellington School in UA. I was like, hey, you know, they told this story. Are you that person? She's like, yes, I am. I was like, how cool is that? Like, getting to meet her firsthand, getting to buy some more products and support them as well, and getting to consume those with people in my community and share that kind of, you know, experience with them. That's what this is all about. So, it always comes full circle some way, shape, or form. And so after shooting the episode with James and Duncan, which was a fantastic time, again, shout out to you guys. You were fantastic hosts, and you have a cool, cool operation going on. And I know you guys are going to be really successful with that moving forward. Not that you aren't today already. But it's just cool to hear the story and then get to meet some people from your story in an outside setting.
So, James and Duncan, hopefully you're listening. Thank you for hosting us. Thank you for sharing your meats and your stories with us. And for the audience that's listening, thank you for tuning in. We certainly appreciate it. We're always open to feedback. You can drop us a line through our website, themeatbucketpod.com. If you go to our Instagram page, there's going to be a link in our bio where you can access that website. You can also find links to listen to this show on other platforms that you might enjoy. You'll find, if you are a restaurant owner or operator, there's a link in there that'll provide some information about one of our sponsors, Pop Menu, and how they can help you totally rebrand your online presence, attract more guests, transact with those guests, and grow revenue without doing a ton more work. I know things are crazy right now. Your staff's probably feeling maxed out, but we can help you during these troubling times with Pop Menu. That being said, let's let the people free, Jake.
Let them free and ride the bucket.
Hi, my name is Duncan Forbes, and I'm the salami monger at North Country Charcuterie.
My name is James Forbes, and I'm the salami swami of North Country Charcuterie.
Gentlemen, welcome to the Meat Bucket Podcast.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Thank you for hosting. We're inside of your building. What street is this?
Chesapeake Avenue.
Chesapeake Avenue. Is it technically Grandview?
Yeah, technically it's Clinton Township, but a couple blocks that way is Grandview.
Okay. So we're sitting in here at a table in your office. You just gave us a tour of the space, which was fantastic. We had the lab coats on. The phones are ringing. You may be hearing that. But we've got the full crew here today. This is our first Meat Bucket experience in a while, so this is going to be a special one, and we're going to have some fun. So since James is up answering the phone...
Work never stops.
It never stops. Duncan, why don't you give us a little laydown of what is sitting on the table in front of us, because you've got a nice spread for us, some charcuterie, so... What are we looking at?
Yeah, all right, great. I'm sorry you all can't see this, but I'll do my best to describe it to you. I'll probably post something on Instagram. You can see it later. Variety of different dry cured salamis and whole muscle cuts that we make here in Columbus. This first salami is a really fun collaboration with Wolf's Ridge Brewing. We mix in their Direwolf, a Russian Imperial Stout. Which we're actually drinking right now, which is nice. Cheers, cheers, guys. Great to meet you all. And a custom blend of Mexican mole seasoning that we get from North Market Spices. And so that salami itself is really dark. Some people actually think it looks like blood sausage or even a chocolate sausage. And they're not wrong with calling it chocolate sausage in that there's some mole in there. So with that cocoa powder, a really fun, rich, unique flavor there. For all the salami and chorizo, we source that direct from McDowell Farms down in southern Ohio. And then we source 95% of the other ingredients from other Ohio makers as well. The next salami we've got is our number one salami, named number one because it was the first recipe that we developed. We were kind of batting around ideas. And actually, a friend of ours that helped make our website a long time ago was a big Dave Matthews fan. And he's just like, why don't you call it number one? So here we are. It does also happen to be our top seller. It's mixed with cheese.
Actually, right now, our Fino is the top seller.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Oof.
All right. Neck, a new champion in town. A
couple percent points.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the number one salami is mixed with cheese from Blue Jacket Dairy out of Bell Fountain, fresh sage and garlic that we chop up for each batch, and then a Chardonnay from Debonair Vineyards up in Northeast Ohio. A fun thing about that Chardonnay, actually, is a couple years ago, it won
Best in class from the San Francisco Chronicle.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Ohio Chardonnay, you know, keeping it real out in California. Then a really fun product, very unique to North Country Charcuterie, and you don't find this from a lot of companies. We call it Haguera Spreadable Chorizo. It's in the style of a Spanish meat called Sobrasada. I was pointing it out to you guys when we were in the drying room. It's a much higher fat content. It's more malleable. You can just spread it right on a cracker, and it's got a lot of flavor too. It's got a lot of paprika, chipotle, garlic, and cayenne in there. Fun to just put on a cracker. You can also cook with it. Then our newest salami is our Zin salami. That's another unique collaboration with a local guy, Scott Zanin. He owns a company called Zanin Wines or Zanin Zinfandel. It's a California Zinfandel that's actually exclusively available for sale in Ohio, and we toss that in as the flavoring on the salami along with black pepper, and then
don't forget the garlic.
And garlic, of course, can never forget the garlic.
Steve loves it. Scott loves his garlic.
Yeah. Then our Berkshire Speck, which is kind of like a smoked prosciutto junior. We take the bottom round of the ham or half the ham, and then have that on cure for a few weeks, then cold smoke over applewood, and then ages for about 3 to 4 months, or 4 to 6 months rather. Then last but not least is our herbed Wagyu Brassola. So that's the Eye of Rounds from Wagyu beef raised in Ohio, and we do a dry cure of James, help me out there. I forget what's in that.
Fresh rosemary, fresh thyme, juniper berries, salt, pepper, and a little bit of cure in there.
So that's probably more detail than I need to get into, but as you can you know, there's a lot going on to it. It's not just your regular old Slim Jim.
No, it sure isn't. And that was great detail. Thank you for going into that for us. And I tasted the first one as you were explaining it and drinking the Direwolf while eating
Oh, nice.
The Direwolf-inspired salami. Is that what that is?
exactly right.
It was really tasty. So there was a lot there for sure, like you said, and we're going to dive into it because we've been chatting for maybe a half an hour doing the tour and everything else. So we've got some good things to hit on here throughout the rest of the experience. But we always start out, I don't know if you've listened to many of these episodes, but we like to start out with standard questions from Nick and Jake. So we're going to toss those your way. Do you know the first question?
I think it was, what is your favorite color?
That's exactly right.
Okay. So. James, why don't you go first?
I'm going with the blue.
Blue?
I'm pretty standard, but blue.
What color? Blue? What kind of?
I'd say like freshwater, ocean blue.
Oh, yeah.
It was really nice. But, you know, some of that darker purple hints, too, really are nice. I was an art major, too, in college, so I know some color theory.
Is there a certain body of water that you're thinking of?
Well, I was just right up on Lake Michigan this past weekend, so that's definitely the first one that comes to mind.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty pure up there.
Yes. Very clear water. It's really nice.
How about you, Duncan?
You know, having listened to the show, I was just, you know, I go back and forth on the various colors. Right now, I really like orange.
I think that's our first orange.
Yeah? It is our first orange. I'm going to throw that out there, first orange. But do you see, there's a lot of orangish hues in charcuterie. I feel like that's when you know you've got a good board. Anything drawn to that, or is another reason that you love orange right now?
Well, I think real fundamentally, I like orange because of our Dutch heritage. Our grandfather's from Holland, and I spent some time living in Amsterdam, and they're the Orangemen. And so that I think, is really why I gravitate towards orange.
You've also got a really orange, puffy jacket you wear a lot.
Yeah, I do, and a hat, too. Yeah. But you're right, they're on this board right now. I mean, even the Haguera, there's got some, you know, as you say, orange hues in the spreadable chorizo.
It's funny how that happens. Just kind of like manifested into your work, right? It's like, all right, well, this chorizo is going to look like Holland now, you know, in my coat.
That's right.
It's awesome. So, you know, let's each do one. What are you binging on Netflix?
My wife and I are watching Manifest right now.
What's that about?
It's about this airplane that goes missing for 5 years and then all of a sudden reappears. But the people who are on the plane, it was only a normal flight for them. And so then when they get back, you know, everyone's freaking out trying to figure out what's going on.
It's like a time traveling sci-fi kind of deal.
Yeah. It's reminiscent of Lost, which we used to really love. First couple seasons of Lost, they got a little crazy there. But yeah, so that's what we're binging on right now.
Are you enjoying it?
Oh yeah, it's a great show to watch in the evening when you're about to go to bed.
Manifest, I will 100% check that out. My wife is a fan of the show Lost. She watched the whole thing.
If she likes Lost, I think she'll like that one.
Fantastic. Manifest. Yeah. Thank you for that. James?
Well, I just finished Flight Attendant. Ooh. With Kylie Cuoco.
HBO, right?
Yeah, and I just learned that the second season's coming out. I'm super excited for that. But also just doing that Marvel movie sequential watch. I've been doing that too.
Little binge there.
Yeah.
Flight Attendant, for as bloody and gory and interesting as it is, it's a really good show.
It is. I really enjoyed that.
I wasn't expecting to like it. Then I was like, I kind of like this. Is that weird? Is that like, it's like a Dexter type of show almost.
It is. Know? And she's so self-defeating and just gets herself in all sorts of crap. But it's interesting and also kind of like watching a train wreck.
It very much. Very much so.
What about tunes? Do you guys jam to some tunes when you're in here making charcuterie?
What's the radio station that you really like listening to right now in there?
Well, we just finally got a sound system in our kitchen. after like 7 years in business, my dad cleared out his office because he retired and found our old stereo system from two houses ago, I think. It was perfect. Put it in, and we've actually been listening to music regularly now.
Before we were using James's old clock radio.
Yeah, and he couldn't hear shit. It was so bad.
So what are you putting on?
You know, regularly now we've got the staff in there. They're listening to 90.5 NPR or 105.3.
All right.
Which is a really fun station. I always think of like a middle school or a high school dance because it's a lot of rap and R&B from like the late 90s, early 2000s. It's great.
105.3. I never listened to that. Yeah. 90.5 I've listened to before.
You'll often hear us listen to Jimmy Buffett too. That's a family favorite.
A lot of fish. Grateful Dead coming from my end.
There you go.
There you go. That's vibey. Mm-hmm. That's vibey. I think my parents were at the Dead & Company show. I don't know if that was last night or they're going to the one tonight. I think there was some back-to-backers up at Blossom.
Oh, nice.
So,
I think Bob Weir's playing up there soon, too.
Yeah. Do you have a cocktail you go to or a specific type of alcohol that you gravitate to?
That is a hard question for me to answer right now because my wife is pregnant, and so the alcohol consumption at our household has decreased a lot.
It's low. That's probably for the best, you know. Yeah. Healthy child.
We go.
You drink a lot of wine and a lot of vodka sodas.
Vodka soda, yeah.
That's good. Slightly healthy, you know.
You hit a lot of White Claw.
A lot of White Claw.
You need to own that.
I do too. No shame.
Yeah. It's an easy thing to drink in the afternoon when you're sitting on the porch.
Duncan and I do a lot of canoeing, and there's always a case of White Claw in that boat.
Yeah. It's just hot summer day.
Yeah, it's adult water.
That's right. Yeah, staying hydrated.
When you used to take beer on the canoe, it was cabrewing.
Yeah.
What do they call this? Claw brewing?
We'll just go with that. I don't need to come up with another one. That's perfect. Yeah.
Enough said. Mic drop.
James?
I love Land Grant's Osher. It's one of their more regular hazy IPAs that they've been putting out. But yeah, this summer I went through a big hazy IPA kick and I'm still on it, but that Osher is always there.
It's a solid pick.
I feel like hazy IPAs, and I don't drink a lot of them, but I feel like most people that I talk to now are drinking some kind of hazy IPA. And they, I don't know if it's just a kick, maybe it's moving away from sessions or what, but hazies.
They're tasty.
Yeah, they're tasty. A lot of, you know, it's got a lot of citrus notes in it, too. You know, we'll see what happens really moving into the fall and into the colder weather, whether they continue them, because traditionally it is a summer beer, so...
Hmm. That's fascinating.
So one thing the audience should know is that you two are brothers.
That's right.
Yep.
So final standard question, who is the alpha?
Oof, depends on the day.
Yes. Yeah, I'll agree with that.
That's a good answer.
I think Duncan and I do a pretty good job of managing. We're equals when we're here. And that's the perception we also want to portray to our staff, because staff's very important to us. One of the founding principles of the company was to create a better working environment for food professionals. So making sure we communicate, maybe over-communicate, and just keep everybody informed and involved. We don't just keep someone packaging, wrapping salami every single day. They're also getting involved with some social media things, or they're doing some of our safety testing. But back to your question, it's very much an equal level of ownership and operations here.
Well, let's stay on that theme a little bit. So where does that come from? Because that's not always the case in a lot of the food service space, especially now you hear about the labor shortage and people are not showing up to work because the environment wasn't great in the first place. The pay maybe wasn't great. And if they don't have to go to work, they're not. So I know a lot of restaurants that I've been talking to are struggling with that. It sounds like it's really important to you to create an environment where people want to come into work. So where does that come from?
Having bad experiences in other kitchens.
Yeah.
I was a chef for 10 years in Columbus before I started the company. So founding principle was making sure it was a good working environment.
So you're a trained chef. Duncan, is that kind of your background as well?
Not at all. Nope.
Okay.
We both grew up here in Columbus, and I went to college out in Colorado and lived out there for about 10 years while James was honing his culinary skills here in Columbus. And I worked in nonprofits, politics, and social enterprise. So I was out there for a while, had a stint in Amsterdam, and then moved back here. So I kind of take on more of the business operations sides, marketing and business development and things like that.
And the level head.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. You don't often hear the word politics a couple sentences before and then hear level head thereafter, but I like that.
I was behind the scenes.
There you go.
I was running the show. No.
I was going to say, when we got the tour and stuff, obviously you're very knowledgeable about what your products are here, which is really cool. So I would not have thought that
you fake it till you make it, right?
Yeah, right. Trained chef. So that was really neat to see. And I know, Nick, you got a video of it. Maybe we'll be able to post that on Instagram and show people. But man, what a cool thing! You know, it's not what I thought of when I thought like cured meats. You know, just all hanging out. You know, and
What did you think? What was different between your perception? Well, and what you
before
saw
we get back, he brought up a good point there. Duncan was involved with making all this stuff for 4 years before we moved into this facility, so he knew everything that was going on into it. And I think we continue to try and keep him involved with some of those things so he can better sell the company and sell the products. So, you know, I was on vacation on Friday and he was doing pH tests and working with the staff in the kitchen. So
I had to dig deep on that one. I was like, I did this a long time ago.
but that's cool. That's true passion and commitment to the business. And it's nice, you know, especially when you're working with your family members mm-hmm. to get that kind of level of effort and output. It's not like, well, I just do this and you do this. And I think there's a lot of businesses that go that route because for whatever perception reasons. So being able to wear multiple hats, stay educated on what you do and help progress the product. You know, you're going to taste things and see things differently and you're going to hear feedback differently as well. So I think it's really important to hear and see the way that you guys interact and the way that, you know, you showed us around. To James's point, you know, I was like, this dude knows the shit. I mean, he straight up knows it. So he's probably the guy.
Well, let's get into those weeds a little bit. So give us the super quick version of growing up here in Columbus, being brothers, you know, kind of what life was like then. And then you guys split ways and then now you came back together and launched this business. So that's really where we want to focus, you know, is on North Country. But give us a little bit of background as to what it was like growing up. And
Do you want me to take that?
You should take it because your wife have been doing a lot of analyzation of
analysis.
Family life. Yeah, I love that word.
So we were fortunate enough to grow up in Upper Arlington with parents that were really involved in our upbringing. Our father owned his own company with his brother. It was a wine distribution company, which I think also helps inform some of our perspective on our company.
Yeah, we grew up in a family-run business.
Yeah, so I'd work there, you know, in high school, holiday
time. We'd go over there as kids and jump around in the boxes and ride our bikes around the warehouse.
Yeah. And our mom started a couple of different consulting businesses for herself over the years. And then we graduated from high school. James went to college in upstate New York, which is actually the inspiration for the name North Country Charcuterie. It was North Country, New York, and he can probably speak to that better in a little bit, and the philosophy behind that. And then I went to college out in Colorado, and James pursued a career in culinary, and then I really kind of backed into this opportunity a number of years ago. I'd started an MBA program at Cornell, and quickly realized that that was a really bad idea. Don't need to get into that. That could be a whole podcast by itself. But and moved back to Columbus, and it was around the time that James and my mom were getting things rolling, and I thought,
we do need to mention that our mom is involved with the company, too.
Yes, yeah, so. She's part owner of the company. Yeah, and she's on vacation right now, so she's like, out of sight, out of mind, you know?
she and I started the company in 2014, and Duncan joined us pretty shortly after that.
Yeah. Were you the one living in the yurt?
Yes. I lived in a yurt for 3 or 4 months. I went to college at St. Lawrence University, and one of the main draws to it was they had a program called the Adirondack Semester. We were our campus was about 45 minutes north of the Adirondack State Park in New York. And there's a lot of culture there, a lot of community there. And we would live down in the Adirondacks in yurts, and we had about 12 students, and we cooked meals for each other every day. Like, two people were assigned meals each day. We had a hand pump well, solar array for power, composting toilet, and professors would come down and teach us classes every day. And then we'd also work with local artisans, whether they were painters, boat builders, rustic furniture makers, and also worked with a lot of the local farmers in the area. And I think that's sort of what really spurred on really my interest in food was those different community events and cooking for my friends. And having that chance to work with the local agricultural community really inspired the whole North Country vibe for me. Most people in the North Country are working multiple jobs. They have some sort of farming going on currently or in their past life. So getting a chance to work with them and bring everybody together was really important to me, and that was one of the founding principles of the company, to bring lots of local farmers together and winemakers together and use their products and help sort of grow our companies together and inform the public about what really is going on around them.
Were you on the culinary pathway before you went into the yurt, or was that?
No, I was not.
Okay. So you get in the yurt, that kind of inspires that that's the route that you want to take?
The sort of, I guess, ethos behind sort of what I want to do with myself. Working with, being involved in the community and working with the agricultural community. That's sort of where that started. We cooked primarily vegetarian meals back then. So it's a little different, but I was not a vegetarian. It was just that's sort of what we did. And also there were quite a few vegetarians on the program.
And then when you moved to Columbus, though, then you were working at Filio.
Yeah, I ski-bummed. Like, I graduated college, ski-bummed for a season. Duncan and I backpacked around Southeast Asia. I wrecked my knee pretty bad and came back home because I couldn't find a job back in Colorado. And was sleeping on my old bedroom, and my parents were like, "What the hell are you doing with yourself? We just spent all this money on this education. You're not going to sleep like this forever." So I got a job. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I ran into an old high school friend, and he got me a job bussing tables at Filio on Grandview.
Yeah, you got the picture of Peter and his wife right here.
Peter and Lori are still good supporters of ours. Still see them regularly. But yeah, worked there for about a year, worked my way up into a kitchen pretty quickly, and that's when I decided I wanted to go to culinary school, and went to Columbus State for school. And at the time, Columbus State was a very apprenticeship-based program, so you'd go to school, and they organized it so you'd have classes one day a week, and then the rest of the week you're expected to have a full-time job. I lucked out and got a job at the Rocky Fork Hunt and Country Club out in Gahanna, or Johnstown. And the chef there at the time, Josh Wickham, was very passionate about teaching. And at one point, he started playing around with charcuterie and curing meats. And we tried drying some stuff in the basement of the building there. Did not turn out well. At the time, I was like, "I'm not touching that." But I understand now why it was. It's just too much humidity down there.
Knowing what you know now, would you have eaten it?
No. but yeah, it continued that path and continued more of the French style of charcuterie, more of the cooked pâtés, terrines, whatnot. And Rocky Fork, we were able to play around with a lot of stuff. It was a lot of fun and serve it to the members because they were very food-centric and entertainment-centric. So continued to play with that and just continued to play with cured meats after that. And then after I left after I finished school, moved on to the Hilton downtown. I was there at one of the opening employees. And while I was there, I was able to really figure out what I wanted to do moving forward with my culinary career. And I knew running a business of my own was going to be it. And didn't want to do a restaurant because even back then, 50% of them fail. So continued to play around with it, and I was working, at one point I was working breakfast shifts for banquets, so I was working 4:30 to noon every day, and then I'd come home and play around with this more. And we'd throw some salami into a cheap Craigslist refrigerator in our mudroom, and once a month, and play with it.
Were you involved in that, Duncan, or were you out in Colorado at this point?
Slightly. I'd come home to visit, and so James had bought that refrigerator off of Craigslist and made it into the drying room in his mudroom.
At one point, it was outside, actually, too.
Yeah. And
you helped me get it into the mudroom.
So I would come home to visit, and we'd play around with it. There was one time I had to. James really wanted to test out the beer salami recipe, and
You went to Seventh Son.
I went to Seventh Son. They weren't open, so I sat there for like an hour waiting for them to be open. I was visiting, so I didn't have anything else to do.
And then you locked yourself out of the car.
Yeah, probably something like that.
So you'd come home and play with your brother's meat.
I mean, if you want to put it that way, sure.
I was waiting for the meat show.
Yeah.
Had to get one in.
Yeah.
What's mom's name?
Jane.
Jane. When did you and Jane?
So we were hashing out next steps of our career. I think it was 2013. It's right around Christmas time. And we were enjoying a glass of bourbon, and we just picked up some cured meat from some other company. We'd been talking about it for a while.
I think it was Charlito's, wasn't it?
Yeah, some kit that they had. And earlier that fall, I think we'd actually traveled to France. Was it that fall, or was it the next one?
I was living in Amsterdam the summer of 2013, so it would have been...
It would have been that fall.
Summer, yes. Yeah,
so I'd been talking about it most of that summer, 13, and then Christmas break comes, my mom and I are talking about what's the next step in our careers, and both my parents had obviously had owned a business before, and I wanted to have that flexibility with my career moving forward. So we're like, let's create a company.
Turns out there's a big difference between creating a company, LLC. Filing paperwork with the state of Ohio for an LLC just requires a lawyer. And then actually creating a business, two very different things.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for pointing that out.
Explain that a little bit. Go further. What do we mean?
So I wasn't involved at that time, but it was, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, James, but from what I understand, Jane, our mom, and James were like, oh, yeah, we'll just like make some salami and then we'll sell at the farmer's market this summer. And they had concocted this idea, or the LLC paperwork was filed in April.
Of 14.
Like, oh yeah, we'll just do it this summer. Well, there's a lot more to it than...
Yeah, especially meat.
Than that, yeah. So it was about a year in recipe development and then regulations too. It's meat processing in the United States is a heavily regulated industry. Cured meat, so then even more so. And
that's what all those white binders are for, right there.
Yeah, so like fast forward now, we have a USDA meat inspector that visits our facility daily. And prior to that, it took us about a year and a half to get approval from the Ohio Department of Agriculture in order to sell. And James trained himself on how to write all that, all the chemistry behind it, all the paperwork and all the science. And so we started out at one food business incubator called the Food Fort, which is affiliated with ECDI. So it's a commissary kitchen where we can just test recipes and make the product. And so we're selling first at the Grandview Farmers Market. But that wasn't until the summer of 2015, so it was a year later, when we actually made the first sale.
And a couple of years after that, 2020, you had... A pretty big year.
We got really lucky in 2020. It's crazy to say that, you know, given everything that's gone on. It was, of course, very scary initially. Prior to the pandemic, 60% of our revenue was restaurants. And so when those shut down overnight, you know, there goes 60% of our business. Probably at that time, maybe 10 or 15% was farmers markets. So then, boom, there's 75% of our business gone. So we were fortunate enough where we had already invested in e-commerce so we could dial that up more since everyone's online and looking for stuff to buy online and ship to their house. And we were fortunate too in that we didn't know it was going to happen, of course. Nobody did. Our products last for a long time. So we knew that we had about 5,000 pounds of product sitting in our drying room and packaged ready to go, but no one to buy it. And so we knew that that would last for a little while. So like, let's say, no, we have zero sales for the next however many months, the product's not going to go bad, right? That's the, fundamentally, cured meats are about meat preservation, food preservation. We just have a way of making it fancy and expensive.
And also very tasty.
Very tasty.
We've been picking on this board a little bit, and I have to say, I did try the chorizo. It's...
What'd you think?
Phenomenal. The spice is perfect. It lingers. I love spicy stuff. I wouldn't consider that like highly spicy. I would say it's perfectly spicy. And I could see what you mean. I'm going to go for it with the honey here in a second.
Nice.
I see how
Yeah, mix and match with the mustard that's there from Old Brooklyn out of Cleveland, and then the tomato jam too. Impossible jams.
Would you say putting it on this is a smart idea, or maybe one of those as well?
Either one of those would be fine. Yeah, it's easiest to do it on a cracker. Probably
I'd go with the Tuscan one.
The Tuscan flatbread cracker. Okay. Yeah, that one's...
That was delicious. Mm-hmm. Those are also...
Aren't like those remarkable?
Phenomenal.
Yeah, God. How did you create that?
Yeah.
I think there's a little Parmesan cheese or something.
Oh, yeah, it's Parmesan on top. Yeah, an Italian seasoning. They do such a great job.
So you guys have been in business for years now. Let's say the 2020 year, and now we're into 2021. What are, let's say, three business lessons that you could give the viewers or the listeners, people who might be aspiring to do something like you guys have done? What would you say?
Oof, man, that's a good question.
Stay flexible. Number one.
How do you mean?
It will never work out the way you plan it to.
Make a plan.
Yes.
But
I didn't, but thankfully
we make
Duncan
plans now.
Came involved and
we make plans
got
now.
Some of it together. You got to stay flexible.
Today, for example, a show up, we were expecting a delivery to be picked up on a pallet, and it was going to go out to our main distributor. Their trucks, they were short drivers and stuff, and so the sales rep shows up with his SUV. And so we loaded onto his SUV. Our plumbing went down today. But we still have to, we still need to operate. We still need to make money. We still need to make products and ship it out. And
we got staff here. We got to keep them employed.
Just gotta keep rolling. Keep rolling with the bunches.
So staying flexible, because things aren't always going to go your way. What's another thing? It doesn't always have to be three, but if you have another one or two points, we'd love to hear them.
I'd say at least for the first number of years, you can't stop. Every minute you've got to just keep going. You want to have downtime, you can't. I think that was a distinct difference between us and I by no means mean to speak ill of anybody at the commissary where we were. There's all phenomenal entrepreneurs that are working their butts off, usually as a side hustle because they got some full-time job. But we were there often more hours than others.
We'd be there 6 days a week
and
doing something.
Yeah. And then into the night, before we knew about the regulations, we were making meat, making salami, at 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning. Because we were working full-time jobs and then doing that at night. So right now we are required by USDA to operate between 6 a.m. and 2:30 p.m. And then we have a meat inspector at our facility that visits our facility daily. We do monthly food safety testing, and we have mountains of paperwork that we do all the time. When we started, we had no idea about any of that because also sometimes regulators have different interpretations of it. We were under one entity at the time that didn't understand the regulations, and so we were operating under what they told us because we didn't know the regulations either. And then we come to find out later, like, actually what we were doing was completely wrong.
Isn't that business, though?
Yeah.
Who was telling me that? Nobody told
me
that.
Yeah, exactly right.
Do you know the thinking behind the hour restriction?
Because we're required to have a meat inspector visit the facility daily, so we have to operate during their business hours. So we could...
There are shifts that they have set up.
Yeah, so we could choose... To go further, we could also choose to work in the nighttime / evening. So, like, was it like 3 to 11 or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, those are shifts that the local USDA branch have set up, mostly to do with the larger companies out there. That's the schedule they've set up. So the USDA is going to follow that, and everyone else has to fall in line.
Because we're under the same regulations often as big companies like Hormel and Boar's Head and Oscar Mayer. We have to do the same.
We have to do
the same stuff that they do, and they've got huge teams of people that are doing all of this stuff.
They're working three shifts and have full cleanup crews, and all those plants that were affected majorly by COVID, they're the same plants that we are expected to follow.
How long does a meat inspector spend here, and what are they doing?
It varies. Some will stay for just a few minutes, like if they happen to come when we've finished for the day. Others will stay for a few hours. You know, they're looking around the facility, making sure that everything's clean, and then the main thing that they do is look at the paperwork to make sure that we've, you know, crossed our T's and dotted our I's.
It really depends upon the inspector.
And it does depend on the inspector. You know, like any job, some people work harder and are better than others.
Sure. but your goal is to always put out, you know, the same quality every day, right? It doesn't matter who shows up. Yeah. It's the same.
Yeah, we do the same thing every day, and we take it beyond most, even the bare minimums. We're at a higher level than that.
Yeah, because they don't have any input on like how we actually make stuff or like what ingredients we put in it. They're just making sure that, you know, we were talking before about pH tests and water activity tests. So they're making sure that what we're doing there is actually following things by the book and that we're not going to make people sick.
Damn, there's so much that goes into every business, and everything is so different that we talk to.
Well, when we were on the tour that you were giving us prior to hitting record, the amount of science that you two have come to at least demonstrate that you know is incredible, you know? And I'm sure that took years to kind of nail that and everything else, at least. Maybe that's just your pitch when the meat inspector comes in. He's like, hey, you know your stuff. But you weren't like neither of you were science guys growing up. Tell that story, because I thought that was pretty funny.
Sure. Yeah. So the story we were telling earlier is that, so, you know, we sell at farmers markets every Saturday, and coming in a couple of years ago to a summer, you know, we were working 6-7 days a week, and we realized farmers markets are important sales, important marketing, important part of the community. We want to be there, but we didn't have the capacity to do it ourselves. So we needed to hire. And so heading into the summer, we thought, well, who could help us out with this? And the first thought was teachers, because teachers are, they have a flexible schedule in the summertime, you know, often look for a little side hustle, because unfortunately teachers aren't, you know, killing it in the salary department. And so I reached out to our high school to see if any high school teachers there might be interested. And sure enough, my ninth grade English teacher, Mrs. Robbins, she hates it when I call her Mrs. Robbins, but I can't call her first name. And our 12th grade chemistry teacher, Mr. Frim, they got back to us and said, yeah, we'll do this. Why not? You know, what you were mentioning, the irony there is that James and I both, James, I think, actually did fail chemistry in high school, and I almost failed.
Yes, I failed one quarter of AP Chem.
One quarter, excuse me. Not the whole class, one quarter.
At least you were an AP Chem. You weren't regular Chem. Okay, hold on, pause. That tomato spread, it tastes like apple butter. It's phenomenal.
Apple butter?
Has anybody ever had apple
butter? Oh, yeah, I love apple butter. I'm going to try some of that.
Freaking apple butter. It's amazing.
I love the flavor. He did a great job.
I was like, is that apple or tomato? It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, Impossible Jams. Logan and his wife, Erica, putting that stuff together.
Literally
real
phenomenal.
Real character.
Yeah, they're awesome.
You don't make tomato jams unless you're crazy. You know? That is phenomenal. It tastes like apple butter. So sorry about that. I didn't mean to get off on a tangent, but I'm tasting things over here.
You got
to
celebrate the food.
One other thing I just want to mention. Nick just tried the tomato jam, but the Wagyu, oh my damn, that is phenomenal. That is amazing. The flavors you guys put in that, I just ate it straight up. It was freaking awesome.
Cool.
So it's thinly sliced, kind of transparent.
Super thin as possible.
It's the eye of round.
So this is beef, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And how long is this? Dried or cured or whatever you...
Cured for 2 weeks, drying about 90 days.
Is it? Yeah, three to 4 months usually. Mm-hmm. Kind of, you know, there's a lot of variability. Like, we try to regulate the humidity and the temperature in there, but sometimes things take longer. Sometimes they finish a little quicker.
Finish is so nice.
It's delicious.
Yeah, some of the fun with that is that we just... we're waiting to hear back, but we submitted it for a National Food Award. And so we'll hopefully... It's a national competition, and so I don't think they get back to us until like maybe December or the beginning of 2022 or something like that, but that's part of the Good Food Awards. So
it's kind of maybe a little peppery. Does that make sense? Is there any kind of rub on there that you do? Or
yeah, it's cured with fresh rosemary, fresh thyme, black pepper, juniper, and salt.
I really got the rosemary on the front end, and it just kind of starts to melt in your mouth when you have
it. Totally does melt. So for our listeners that are really into the meat game, there's different grades of Wagyu, correct? And there's a letter and a number, like A5 or A7 or something like that. Are you familiar with these grading scales, and do you know what caliber?
I am familiar with that. I wasn't aware that Wagyu did that. I know that they do that with Kobe. This company that we work with in particular, they have their own grading scale. And I try and do buy the signature or higher on these.
The company's Sakura.
Yeah, Sakura.
And then we also get some beef from McDowell Farms.
And this is all Ohio?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where's McDowell Farms at?
McDowell, yeah, that's our main supplier. McDowell's down in far southern Ohio. The town, I believe, is Winchester or Bidwell. Something like that.
Well, that's not what's on their invoice, so I can't help you there.
Yeah, I forget the name of the town, but yeah. Chad McDowell is the farmer owner there, and then
his son's involved, and yeah. I think his wife's involved too.
Yep, and then his daughter does a little bit of work around Columbus as well. And yeah, they've been awesome to work with and raise a phenomenal product.
You were talking about how they raise their product.
Yeah.
Right. Can you talk a little bit about that? So,
yeah. So, they've really invested in the Global Animal Partnership verification, which is a third party animal husbandry verification that kind of spun out of Whole Foods originally. Whole Foods kind of had their own internal audit that they would do for the farms that and the beef and the pork and chicken, and everything that they wanted to source. And I don't know the history specifically, but over time, that spun out into its own third party verification. And so, they'll certify farms across the country following a very specific and really heightened animal husbandry practices. So specifically with the pork, that's a GAP level 3. So that's for all the salami, dry cured salami and chorizo that we make. That's GAP level 3, which there's a variety of things. The biggest thing though is that they're raised, the hogs are raised in big open air hoop barns with outdoor access. And what that means is it's a huge open field kind of behind the barn. And so they're sort of on pasture and then in the barn as well, but there's no gate or anything like that. Like they can go out into the field as much as they want. And some of that
and farrowing crates.
Yeah, so they're not
big
on
thing in the pork industry is farrowing crates.
Yeah, so with GAP 3, you want to talk about farrowing crates. So farrowing crates are, yeah, so that's more like industrial farming where the sow is really kind of locked in to with
can only stand up and down and has food and water always available, but the fear there is that the mother sow will accidentally lay down on and kill one of its piglets.
And so then that decreases the farm's yield, right? And so then it's harder for them to run the business with that. And at least that's the rationale for it. And then also, it's easier to manage it's easier for the farmers to manage those hogs since they're so confined. You know, I mean, these are big animals, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
And so then with GAP level 3 and with McDowell Farms, then the sows are in. I can't remember the exact term that they use, but it's basically a
gestation pen
where they. It's this isn't the best description, but it's what comes to mind. Imagine a doghouse with a front yard, and so it's a bedded pen inside the doghouse where the piglets are, and then where the sow is primarily. But then they can come outside as well, and so they can kind of roam around, and then the farmer can also access everything that they need to and take care of them.
So freedom, happiness.
That's right.
A little bit of
a
better life.
Non-GMO too.
Yeah. That's, Non-GMO.
Yeah. They used all non-GMO verified feed, and something's kind of cool is he when he was a smaller scale, he used to have all the corn and soybean that they would need he grew that and then would feed it to the hogs as well. Now he's a little bit bigger and he's a buy it, but it's all non-GMO verified.
It's a lot more work. I don't want somebody to hear like, the animals can just like roam around and do what they want. It's like, if you have kids and you let them roam around and do what you want, it's a lot of work. Okay. You want to keep them confined. You want to give them structure, all that stuff. Animals are the same way, especially when you have hundreds,
Oh yeah,
maybe thousands.
Yeah.
So try to wrangle them all in at once. You figure that equation out, person out there listening.
A lot of labor.
You know, it's not easy. So shout out to all the farmers out there that are they're doing it their way and the right way.
Yeah,
I would call that the right way. I mean, you want to be as humane as you can to a living creature on Earth, especially if you're gonna dispatch it and eat it and turn it into something.
Yeah.
Turn it into
harvest.
Something.
The term now is harvest.
Harvest.
Yeah.
Harvest it and turn it into some awesome charcuterie.
Yeah. I like Dispatch, though.
It's a band, right?
Nah, it is a band. But
I love that band.
That's a
listen to them all the time.
That's a term.
It'd take them out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Harvest the animal.
Your boy on YouTube, Jake's a big YouTuber.
Okay.
Yeah. And he likes some pretty niche content.
Where are we going here?
Yeah, not that. It's not dark and twisted like that. But he's a narc. Also, he's got a narc cam on his. He bought it and put it in his car.
It's not a narc cam.
It is.
It's a
camera.
Dash cam.
A dash cam. Narc cam. And he narcs on people. And it's all inspired by this one guy that like, what's his name?
John Correa. Active self protection.
Okay. He just breaks down. You know, videos of, you know, robberies or, you know, stick car ups, accidents or stick ups or whatnot. And I think that's where you got the term dispatch. Long story short, Jake's a big YouTube enthusiast.
Yeah. So, you know, keep yourself strapped. I don't even own a gun or anything. I just got a camera. I'm just trying to just make it so it's easy for my insurance.
Have you seen some gnarly crashes and you've posted that on YouTube?
No.
He's got one story where he literally got out of his car and. But I didn't citizens have, arrest.
I didn't
this
have.
Guy.
A, I didn't have.
No
a,
way.
I didn't have a NARC camera at that time. You'll know this place really well, Club 185.
I love that place.
Coming home, Nick and I like to play golf. We used to play down at Hickory Hills Golf Club, and it's late night. And I'm going through Livingston, and I think what is that street that is the cross section there
with Club 185?
Yeah,
Mohawk.
Mohawk. So that goes basically like Mohawk. If you drove straight, it would hit the church.
That's right.
So. I'm about to go, I'm going eastbound, right through that intersection, and this guy is going in reverse through, I've got a green light, he's going in reverse through a red light, and he goes into the church parking lot, hits a pole.
Oh my gosh.
And he looks like he's dead. So I pull over across the street, put my four ways on and get out, go up to the car, and I'm like, hey, I was like, you okay? I was like, he's not responsive. So I open the door, get the keys out, lean him back, and he's like, hey, I'm fine. He's like, I'm fine. I didn't do anything. I'm fine. And I was like, no, you're not fine. I was like, you went through the intersection in reverse. You hit the pole and I got the keys. And this woman, waitress, comes out of Club 185, bartender. I would know if I saw her again. She's not a tall or a big person. She's very petite. And I give her the keys. And I said, just hold on to these keys for a second. I'm going to call the cops.
Yeah.
And she's freaking out and she's like talking to somebody else and she's got the keys in her hand hanging there. And this guy jumps out of the car, grabs her arm, tries to pull the keys out of her hand. And I jump on him and I put my hands like I choke him out essentially and throw him on the ground.
What?
Oh, wow.
And I throw him on the ground. I was like, don't you touch her. I was like, I will light you up, boy. And there was an undercover cop sitting in the parking lot.
He just happened to be there.
Yeah. He was just watching until the bird came by and all the other cops. And he's like, listen, man. He's like, I saw what happened. He's like, we can put whatever you want on the record. He's like, this guy's obviously intoxicated and went through backwards. He tried to pull these keys out of this woman's hand to assault her or whatever. He's like, that's not going to fly in our book. And he's like, I'm glad you didn't punch him, you know, in the face. He's like, I thought you were going to punch him. And I was like, I'm glad I didn't punch him because I didn't see you either, you know. And the guy was just like crying and whining. He's like, that guy over there assaulted me and blah, blah, blah.
He just went straight victim mode.
I was like, yeah, dude, you just went in reverse through Livingston, which you're lucky you're not dead or didn't kill somebody else. So
that's incredible.
Yeah, he's a narc.
I don't know if you know the definition of narc.
I think you narc on that guy.
That story, he's a hero, I think.
Yeah, I'm with Duncan on that one.
I did have to show up. I got subpoenaed by the court, and he saw me walk in.
Oh, really?
That dude saw me walk in, and he immediately pled guilty, and the judge was like, thank God you showed up. I didn't even have to give a statement.
Oh, yeah, but wow.
See, Jake and I were working together at the time, and he was like, oh, man. He's like, I got to miss this afternoon. I got to go do jury duty or whatnot. And I was like, never in a million years would I have ever stopped and done anything about that situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If a guy comes out backwards in an intersection and hits a pole, I am driving by so fast and just deleting that out of my memory.
Uh-huh. I just want to make sure he was okay. He just turned out to be a dick.
You got a kind heart.
Yeah, he does.
You put him in jail.
What a guy.
I put him in jail. I hope he's there right
put
now.
Put him in jail.
If you're listening to this from jail, whatever your name is, we got charcuterie here. I'll send you a sausage. Bastard. This one's on me.
Yeah, we've been putting together some fun opportunities for companies to, you know, show their appreciation for employees and customers and clients and things like that to send, you know, give the gift of charcuterie this holiday season. We've got a lot of fun stuff with a lot of these accoutrements here that you guys have been talking about and some of the products as well.
So you can get that tomato jam right here, right now.
That's right. Yeah, good. Mm-hmm. It's in our farmer's market charcuterie kit.
Do you accept cash?
Sure do.
All right, well, we'll be talking.
Okay, great. Yeah, something that's fun about that kit, too, is there's a new local, it's called Grateful Snacking Company, and she contacted us through a friend. She's making keto, paleo, gluten-free, vegan,
all the catchwords.
Crackers.
All of it in one?
Correct. And so I was honest with her when she first told me that, and I was like, she laughed, and she said, that doesn't sound very good. That sounds like cardboard.
Like, yeah, I don't even know what that would be.
Yeah,
what, air?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but they have a really remarkable flavor that is a part of the charcuterie kit that has the tomato jam in it. It's pretty fun.
Do you have any of the charcuterie kits with the cracker in it?
The fig and almond crisps, not yet. Those will be coming out for the holidays. Yeah. So we'll be launching those. Actually, we should be launching those in the next week or so. So probably by the time this podcast airs,
let's say 2 weeks,
we'll have that. Well, they'll be available for purchase. They won't be available for shipping yet. We'll kind of stagger that. And did we give a third example for the business?
No, but if you have one, I'd love to wrap it up.
I've been trying to rack my brain. So we talked about flexibility. Were you going to say something?
No, we talked about flexibility.
And then basically just, I think to summarize it in a word is keep working.
Yeah, grind.
Two words, grind it out.
Yeah,
don't stop. Because you know, we're still, you know, now these days we're putting in less than 80 hours a week, but it's still, you know, upwards of 50 and 60 hours a week. And we've got a great team of folks.
A lot of new hires since the pandemic and positions created here too.
And with all of that being said, I think it's still also important to take a break. It's very hard to balance that, but you gotta still, like, in order to do the grind, you've got to build in, you know, James just spent the weekend up in Michigan camping. Earlier this summer, I went and visited some friends out in Oregon and, you know, kind of refilled my well and seeing friends. So, like, that's, you've got to prioritize that and build that in between the grind.
What about, and thank you for putting a bow on the three key business tips for success. I'd like to talk a little bit, we spent a good amount of time about kind of the context and history of how you guys got to where you're at today. So what does the future hold as you guys kind of look out over the next couple of years? And I know obviously that can change, but as you sit here and see it today, what kind of things come to mind?
Growth. There's a lot of opportunity right now, and especially the meat industry. And for instance, during quarantine, we were approached by two different companies asking us to make bacon for them. That would basically be about 2,000 pounds of bacon a week. Right now, for example, we're making about 300 pounds and we're maxing out. So unfortunately, we had to turn them down, but, you know, that's still in the back of my mind, and we're still looking at, okay, what's the next step? We're definitely going to be outgrowing this facility. I'd say currently we are pushing the facility to its max, mainly based on our restrictive hours. Something we didn't talk about those hours is we work during those hours. We're given 40 free hours of inspection a week, so it doesn't cost us anything with the USDA coming in. if we want to work outside those hours or a holiday or a weekend, we do have to pay them.
And a lot of larger companies do that. They'll work 24/7, big companies. They just build that in their operating costs.
A lot of companies in Columbus. There's a huge manufacturer of Taco Bell meat here in Columbus.
Aren't you supposed to get typically paid for working? And you have to pay them so you can work?
Yeah.
That is lost on me, my friend.
Get it right, USDA, you dinguses.
And under most circumstances, generally supportive of government regulation, because I think there are a lot of examples of a lot of businesses taking advantage of people and doing the wrong thing. But this, some of the regulations that we have to deal with is just like, come on.
Lame. So we're seeing growth. A new plant, more bodies, et cetera.
Yes. Yeah, bigger facility for sure.
What else?
Yeah, the bigger facility, that's really got to be the next thing, because we, 6 months out of the year, we're at full capacity here. We want to grow our online business, our e-commerce business. That was something we started to do in 2019, grew a lot in 2020, and then we want to continue to do that. And I imagine that we would venture into a retail store of some kind down the line. How we would approach that is pretty unclear, and what we would really do there. But that would be something.
I have ideas.
Well, there's tons of ideas.
I know what I want. Yeah, but it's when's the right timing to do that?
Can we get a sneak preview?
Well, early on when I was starting the company, it was my idea was a Piada, not Piada, Pistachio Vera meets Gatzinger's. That good deli, old school deli, lots of fresh charcuterie products, pâtés, terrines, everything in there. Awesome sandwiches, but at the level of a Pistachio Vera.
Which is a bakery.
Yes, a bakery in German Village that really puts out some phenomenal products.
Macaroons.
The artistry behind it, too. Like everything is a work of art that they put out.
I remember being down there every freaking weekend, and I would never get the chance to go in because the damn line was so long.
Yeah, it's bad.
I was like, what are they doing? Are they giving away stuff? And you get in there, and you're like, mm-mm, they ain't giving this away. This is, you gotta pay for that. That's not free.
Yeah.
I was like, I want one macaroon. I'm like, $1,000? Oh, my God. No, it's not true. But the one thing I wanted to mention was, and I thought was neat when you were taking us around here, which is a really, in Columbus history, there's some companies here that have taken off and made names of themselves. Who used to be in this building?
Yeah, so this was Jenny's Ice Cream first and original production facility after they outgrew the North Market.
How freaking cool.
Yeah, so there's definitely some good vibes, good juju in here. And, they've of course...
Yeah, we're curing meat in their old ice cream freezer.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I've heard... Is it true that... I think that I've heard that their Michigan Avenue plant actually used to be a meat processor.
Yeah, it used to be a bologna plant.
Okay, yeah. Only
somebody like Ron Swanson could get behind like meat ice cream. You know what I mean? But I think maybe a combo's coming up here sometime.
Do a collaboration.
Hey, Jenny, maybe a bacon ice cream. Bacon ice cream.
We could do that, yeah.
With a little scotch in it.
Yeah. A little bit of this tomato apple butter spread.
Yeah. We've got Watershed Distillery next door, so we could put some bourbon in there. I think we're onto something.
Winning.
Yeah, this is what happens. You have a drink or two, you have a lot of really good ideas flying, and then they all just piss away into the wind, and you love it. And this is beautiful, because it's on the record. We can re-listen to this and figure it out. But
yeah, that's right.
Not everybody has that opportunity. But Jenny's was in here.
That's right.
Which is really cool, because they are literally like, they're
apparently,
a
I think
Columbus State.
If I remember the story correctly, they actually their first office furniture was a picnic table. And they had the picnic table like right here in the middle of the room where we're sitting.
According to John.
And again, according to John Lowe. John Lowe and Jenny and her husband were cranking it out here.
Now, I'm not, I might be far-fetched to say this, but Jenny's has got an exotic ice cream, right? And when you make really nice charcuterie, you're not using just a limited ingredient. You're putting time and effort and a blend into place. So,
oh, yeah.
Is this the Jenny's of charcuterie?
Yes.
I love it.
Well, that could be a good way to wrap this up, unless y'all have some final thoughts that you want to throw down.
I think we can end there.
Yeah,
I think we can end on that.
Yeah, thanks for coming by, guys.
Yes, nice to meet
you. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
This was really good. This will be a good episode. There's a lot of... a lot of things that we learned, and the meats were fantastic. So thank you for putting that spread together. And there's still a little bit of beer in that pitcher, so I think we'll have one of those.
We'll take care of that.
Here's how I'll wrap it up. I know a lot of the people who listen to this podcast love food infinitely. Well, here in Columbus, you've got North Country Charcuterie, right? And go onto their website, pick out something, buy it for your significant other or yourself, have your friends over, support the local business. It's delicious. It is really delicious. So go make that purchase and taste it for yourself while you watch the episode or listen to the episode.
Yeah,
you can't watch it. Shit, we don't have YouTube yet.
Yeah, hit up Hills Market downtown, Black Radish Creamery at North Market and Dublin North Market.
Yeah, both of them.
And Wylands. Go see our boy Kent. Kent is awesome. He was our first wholesale customer ever.
At Wylands Market.
Yeah, Wylands. So he knows our products backwards, forwards, upwards, and down. And also is the only place that you can get our Brasola for sale at a retail shop. You can also pair it well with cheese or honey or any other sort of accoutrements he's got there. Mm-hmm. And if you're in Delaware,
Greater Gouda.
Good customers of ours. Good shop up there, too.
How about this? If somebody makes it this deep into the episode, you say, first comment on our Instagram post when we post about North Country Charcuterie, Jake buys me charcuterie. You go ahead and comment that on the post. I'll buy you a charcuterie from here of your choice, and it's on you. It's on me.
Wow.
It's on me. So go listen to the damn episode. If you don't make it this far, shame on you. Somebody's going to get it.
All right, gang. Well, that's a wrap. Thank you so much.
Cheers, thanks, boys. Guys. Thanking you for listening to our latest episode of the Meat Bucket Experience series. We're grateful and literally hashtag blessed for the opportunity to sit down with quality people who are pursuing their passions and sharing the journey with all of us. If you do enjoy the Meat Bucket podcast, please show us some love and leave a review on Apple Podcast app. The funnier, the better. And there's a good chance that they'll be read on air. Thanks again for anding, budding, pairing, sharing and listening to this podcast. Stay pure out there and ride the bucket. Alan. Little worries fade away. Well, all your friends, I guess, they hate when we are done. Probably just jealous, they can't get in all the fun. The world that we've created is a new exciting place, but time gives us the finger with its head right in our face. But we would be foolish not to love again, foolish not to try. We would be foolish not to take in every single drop of life. Time we have is fading now. July is moving way too fast. Just grab a hold, forget the world, make this summer
so long. I thought I'd never feel this way. Water fills my lungs, vision gone, something's wrong. But you pulled me to the shore, said that I had to be strong. Yeah, I had to be strong. Yeah, well, you helped me breathe. Coming to, when everything is clear, now I can see. Yeah, what life could really be on another summer's eve.
we would be foolish not to love again, foolish not to try. It would be foolish not to take in every single drop of life. This time we have is fading now. July is moving way too fast. Just grab a hold, forget the world, and make this summer last. Again, foolish not to try. It would be foolish not to take in every single drop of light. This time we have is fading now, and we are moving way too slow. Even if it doesn't last, I'd hate to be alone.